From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And you know what? It is beginning to happen thanks to a little bit of collaboration, really, is what I think brings this whole thing together. Today, we're going to be talking with Evan Schmidt. She is the CEO of Valley Vision, and she is one of those people. She's one of the leaders of Sacramento, but she is helping bring policy change in and around Sacramento and specifically our business community included that is good for our economic vitality and long-term sustainability of Sacramento. What's all that mean? We got a really cool leader of Sacramento coming on the show. She's going to talk about her entity. And at the end of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit more about collaboration and maybe how all of us should think about collaboration over competitiveness. So stick around, my friends.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Getting ready to have some fun with Evan Schmidt. She is the CEO of Valley Vision. We're going to talk about Valley Vision. We're going to get to know Evan a little bit better. And apparently she has some things about her that are a little bit weird, which I definitely do. Anybody who knows me knows that I have a weirdness about me. And, you know, sometimes that weirdness can be our superpower. So let's get to know Evan Schmidt and let's get to maybe start with a little overview of Valley Vision. How did you become the CEO of Valley Vision?
Yeah, well, first, thanks so much for having me, Mark. This is really fun. I'm glad to be here. So a little overview of Valley Vision. Valley Vision is a nonprofit and civic leadership organization. We are located in Sacramento, but we're very much regionally facing. So we could work anywhere from a 6 to 12 county region all the way to a couple statewide projects. So we can be quite far reaching, but we usually focus right here on the region. We improve livability in communities by advancing what we call our triple bottom line values, all co-equally. So that is advancing economic prosperity, social equity, and environmental sustainability. What we're really known for is a few things. First is convening people and bringing about collaborative processes. So we really try to bring people together to solve the problems of our communities. Actionable research. We do a lot of research across economic factors, health factors, other things. And we really try to bring that into decision making here in the region. We do some policy work and system change work. So we do education, advocacy, as well as, you know, really helping to align different systems to work more effectively together. And then finally, we do what I call catalytic programming, or we manage processes and projects for clients around some of the most pressing issues in the region.
Sounds like you're a very, very smart person, which is going to be awkward for me since I'm a C student from Oakmont High School. I know you've got all this background, and but I think it's important to share with our audience what's actually happening on the ground and how it relates to entrepreneurship. But first, what led you to this journey where you became the CEO?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say that all the way from when I was a kid, I've always been really interested in things being fair and kind of solving problems in the community. I think that there's never been a time in my life that I wanted to do a job.
I knew we were different.
But I wanted to do a job anything other than kind of solving community problems or helping bring about, now I would say equity, but as a kid, I would just think about it as what's fair. Yeah. You know, and I remember when I was in sixth grade, I learned that there had never been a woman president. And I was like, what?
I know, it's crazy.
That's not fair. That's not right. That's half of the population. So I've always had that piece of me that really...
That's going to change eventually, right? Come on.
Well, I can't believe now, years later, that's still the case. But so that's always been kind of where I've been oriented is community problem solving. I've been in California for about 22 years now. I came here to go to graduate school at UC Davis in the community development department. And what led me specifically to Valley Vision actually started right there. I was in maybe my first year of graduate school, and we would do these lunch and learns where people from the community would come and talk about what they do. And somebody from Valley Vision came and talked about the work that was going on. And I was like, light bulb. I was like, oh, that's the kind of work I want to do. And so I kept it in my mind of like the types of things that you do if you work at Valley Vision and wanted to learn more about it. So that's, you know, managing processes, doing research, you know, being really oriented towards kind of triple bottom line issues. So I really kind of pointed myself in that direction. And a number of years later, I got in touch with one of the former CEOs of Valley Vision, Susan Frazier, and did some work for her. And eventually that led me to Valley Vision. And so I've been at Valley Vision for 8 years now, almost 8 years now. And I've done like all the things, you know. I came in as a consultant, but I've been a project manager and a project leader. I was kind of a research and strategy director. And then 2 years ago, I became the CEO after my predecessor left, and Valley Vision did a national search. And I just felt like I wanted to throw my hat in the ring because Valley Vision felt like home to me from a work perspective. You know, it really was all the things that I wanted to be doing in my professional life.
Well, you've been recognized as one of the top CEOs in the region, in this business community. You said earlier that you had a weirdness around the way you lead. Okay, so how do you become this, recognized CEO, but you've got this weirdness about you? Tell us about that.
Well, my guess is everybody thinks that they're weird. So yeah. In that way, I'm totally normal.
True.
But, what my particular brand of weirdness around leadership, I think, I mean, first of all, I'm an introvert. And I always feel like there's actually a lot of leaders who are introverts, but it's not something that people, like, we all do these really extroverted jobs. Mm-hmm. But I have to, I think when you're doing that, you really have to push yourself to be out there and to be in that really public role. So I've always felt like that makes me a little bit of a weird leader.
Can I ask you about that? So, because that's interesting. I think there's a lot of people, I think deep down, I'm a little bit more on the introverted side as well, but here's my job, somehow I chose this. But was there something that clicked that said, look, I have to overcome that? Did you have fear around being extroverted or being a leader, stepping up to lead? Was there a turning point?
Yeah, no, I absolutely did. And I specifically had fears around public speaking, and now I do it all the time. But as a young person and as a kid, actually, the first time I had to do a public speaking engagement as a teenager, I almost passed out and they had to escort me off the stage. So yikes. I've come a long ways from that. but I think that, there's all kinds of things that kind of lead us down the road that we do and the ways we try to push ourselves into what can sometimes be uncomfortable situations. And I do feel like I'm kind of a pusher. Like I like to push myself.
You battle through it, just work through it. So any advice, is there a learning in there for, because I don't think you and I are alone in terms of not feeling super comfortable getting up in front of people, but then we've learned to play through it. Is there anything any tricks?
I think it's a changing point for me was a shift in my thinking from like, okay, leadership is this static set of characteristics and you've got to be really, extroverted. You've got to be really like charismatic and out there and authoritative and assertive and take up a lot of space in the room. And that's what leadership is. And I think I shifted in my thinking that, I actually think leadership is stepping up and like volunteering to do the things and like keep taking a step forward, a step forward, a step forward about things you really care about. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, if you can like push yourself to do that, then you end up kind of being the leader in the room because you're, kind of consistently doing the work and showing up and, putting yourself out there in that way.
You know, that's interesting because I feel like sometimes we look around and you see a void in leadership and you say, well, if nobody else is going to do it, I guess it's me. And I feel like that's the kind of leader, that's the way I've emerged into leadership as well, as I just trying to be a team player, but looks like we need some help and somebody has to step up and be a little bit more of a leader. And so it's been me and it's kind of snowballed, but it's not like natural born leadership.
Right. And I think that's the shift of like having, and I think it's a myth that there's the natural born leadership and that's it, and it's a very kind of, for me, a very male alpha picture. Mm. And so, I think if you care and if you, just like you said, if you're all about the team, you're all about the work, you're all about making the improvement or whatever it is that you're trying to do, that's leadership.
Yeah. I think I interrupted you about, you had another weird thing I think you were going to tell me about, or is that just it?
That's probably the, I mean, there's always other weird things, of course.
Okay, give us some nobody knows.
No, but I think also that, I think maybe it's all around that, like an alpha leader versus a different type of leader. Maybe that's where I, that's where I feel weird. And I, you know, as a kid and as a young person, I've always been known more for being really sensitive, empathetic, very analytical type person. And so,
that's again, interesting
it just didn't
combo.
Match my characteristics of what I thought a leader was.
It's an interesting combo because a lot of times, introverted people or really analytic people, you don't necessarily see the empathy right off. Have you ever felt that? Have you ever, have people said that to you that they, not that you're not empathetic, but that that wasn't their first impression?
Yeah. Okay. No, I think so. Yeah. It's more, it runs a deeper, it's a deeper chord.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, I do have, I am very analytical, but I'm, I don't think I'm cold about it, but it's, those things can sometimes be intentional a little
bit. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about Valley Vision. You're making a big impact. Talk to us about the different areas where you're working to make an impact.
Yeah, thanks. So one big area that we're working in is workforce and economic development. And I know that has a lot of intersection with the work that's going on here. But we are, first of all, we've been active in workforce for a long time. And so we do a lot of work to help align systems and work with employers to look at how do we kind of build a talent pipeline of for the jobs that that are here in the region. And so we work with our community colleges, with our four-year universities, with our workforce boards, with employers and other community stakeholders to bring data to bear. So we just did a big study on the worker shortage around childcare, which is a really big issue in the region right now. And other kind of sector issues so that we can understand what are the jobs that we really need around here and how do we activate those.
With, so childcare, that one wouldn't have come to mind. That's not the one that I hear a lot. I hear stuff in cybersecurity, there's a big need for, and others, but what's the, how do we overcome, what are we doing to overcome that? I mean, the data is helpful, but like what action are we proposing or are we actually doing that can solve it?
Yeah, well, it's one thing I'll say about childcare. It might not be the thing that jumps out to you, but it is a big barrier for workers across all different types of jobs, right? Yeah. If you don't have enough workers in childcare and people can't get affordable childcare for
their kids, it's stopping other workers.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a real issue for the region. So, and it's good to understand all the issues because it's kind of a complicated one. There are wage issues. So there's just not a good living wage for people who are in that sector. So really looking at how are we providing opportunities for growth once you're in, it's the early childhood education sector. It's looking at different, for example, transitional kindergarten is a new requirement. For it is kind of moving into something that's required, and so and there's
that means you're going to school a little bit early, earlier.
So it's a year earlier than kindergarten, and there's certification programs for that, and it pays way more than preschool.
Uh-huh.
And so it's taking everybody who was working in preschool and now bringing them into the transitional kindergarten space, making a shortage in preschool. So understanding something like that really helps you know, like, okay, we need to do more around certifications for preschool. We need to do more about wages there. We have to understand that this transitional kindergarten, which is a really good thing, is having a bunch of other effects. So that's just an example of...
Sounds like an entrepreneurial opportunity to me. Because realistically, many of the daycare centers, it's entrepreneurs, they're small businesses.
Absolutely.
And so it's really an effort to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. That pipeline of small business around childcare is a huge piece of this whole puzzle. And part of that is about facility costs. You know, there's all kinds of things that go into that that make it really expensive and difficult to run a childcare center. And so how do we look at some of the policy issues that are creating barriers there?
What policy issues are creating barriers there?
Well, it's just requirements around facilities. There's kind of permitting. There's like ways that you might streamline processes for small business.
Do you feel like we're overregulated in that realm?
I would hesitate to say overregulated because we're talking about the care of little kids, but I do think, you know, there is things to look at to say, how could we be more efficient and make it more user-friendly and make it more accessible for people who are trying to start those businesses?
Okay, interesting. So workforce is a big piece of it. Is there anything else within workforce that you feel like we need to dive deeper on?
Well, one exciting project that we have coming up that we're just getting launched into, it's called the Community Economic Resilience Fund, and Valley Vision is spearheading it for our region. And it's really an opportunity.
Is that called SURF? Like, is there an acronym for that?
It's called SURF. And it's really about creating and implementing a regional vision for economic growth and development. And it's centered around you know, equity. So really looking at where the communities and neighborhoods across our region, where people have been left out in the past, and how do we make sure that we're making sure that the outcomes are positive for them. And then it's also about recovery from the pandemic. So that's a big piece of it. Is one of the reasons that this came about is saying not everybody had the same experience in recovery coming out of the pandemic. So how do we help equalize things? And then the third piece is the lower carbon economy. So there's some, you know, a lot of policies pushing us into electrification of transportation and buildings and things like that. How do we build the worker pipelines and make sure that we're like aimed to hit those goals?
Yeah. Now on the equity piece, these are the, I guess, underserved populations. These might be in, I don't know if this is the correct term, but maybe the lower income areas or, and so is there a higher unemployment in those areas? So it seems like that's definitely not only from a fairness standpoint, but there's a lot of talent there.
Exactly. You know, the return on investment for really having a strategy that brings it's low income, it's communities of color, it's rural communities, because we're looking at a whole 8-county region. So it's really diverse communities in terms of, you know, just the landscape. We've got cities, we've got suburbs, we've got rural communities, we've got farming, we've got mountain communities. So it's all of the above. You know, the more you're able to harness the talent of people who haven't had those opportunities, the better the economic outcomes are for all of us. So it's not only important from kind of a moral standpoint, but it's actually really important from an economic standpoint.
You feel like there's maybe some lack of awareness in some of these communities, maybe even across different sectors, even here in Placer County, which is probably not known for that other than maybe in our rural areas. But there's lack of access to this knowledge that these opportunities even exist.
Yes. When you start looking at, you know, I think it was for the manufacturing sector, I looked at this list of jobs, things that I'd never heard of before. I didn't have any awareness of. And the annual income was so much higher than I would have ever imagined for jobs that only took maybe a junior college degree or something like that. So I do think lack of awareness around what the opportunities are and how to onboard onto them is a huge issue. And then I think also, like, can you imagine yourself in those types of jobs? And for a lot of communities, maybe they don't, that hasn't been out there. So right. So that's more challenging.
Yeah, and people aren't growing. Like one of the jobs, so we have a workforce group as well called Allegiant, and where it's focused on veterans predominantly. And one of the areas that we've seen this big need is in sort of rebuilding our infrastructure. And with the 5G rollout, we need a lot of people that can climb towers and do electrical type stuff. And they don't have to have, you know, the electrical license. They just need to be physically able to learn, you know, to climb a ladder or climb a tower and learn. And these are pretty high paying jobs, and there's a lot of upward mobility because there's going to be a huge rollout in many areas like that as we rebuild our infrastructure.
Exactly. And there's a lot of money coming down the pike for infrastructure projects. We're anticipating a lot of construction and in different things. And so it is really important that there's an awareness piece, there's a training piece, and then there's also kind of an anticipating piece, especially when you're thinking about the low carbon transition that we're imagining as a nation and as a state.
You know? Charging stations, would that be a big need for people that can install charging stations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, even reimagining different systems for transportation. I mean, there's the what we can see in the immediate future, and then there's kind of what we know might be coming a further way away. So I think being able to really, as a whole region, kind of set our vision of what does that look like, I think it's a really exciting opportunity.
So, so I'm kind of diverting a little bit, but how does a vision like that get set? So we're talking, you know, there's a broader vision for Valley Vision, but in terms of setting a vision, who are the stakeholders? Who gets involved in to set the, you know, a single vision when there's so many people with, you know, varying points of view and priorities?
Yeah. Well, our job in this is really to build that coalition. So we're building a coalition and we're building an investment strategy. And the coalition is who is going to inform that investment strategy. And so we've been giving a lot of thought to just that question of how do you take, and it's an 8-county region, how do you build a regional economic vision in such a large and diverse area? And with the goal of making it really inclusive, making it really point towards those who have been excluded in the past. So this is a really like ambitious effort. But the way we're thinking about it, first of all, is recognizing that we're not all one geography. You know, we really have to. So here in Placer, we're thinking about, you know, the kind of the Sierra Foothills Band, as you know, is here. There's some of the Son of Tahoe. There's also kind of the Sacramento metro and suburban mm-hmm. area. And Platscher is a good example because you've kind of got a little bit of everything in there. So we're starting with kind of dividing up into five different subregions so that people can really talk about the issues that are most relevant to the area. And that's a really important part. And the stakeholders right now are anybody who raises their hand and wants right. to participate. And as we go further down the line and kind of get, people who want to get more involved, they want to be decision makers, they want to sit on the regional council, then we'll have different criteria and different kind of ways to apply to positions like that.
This is interesting to me because I wonder how these teams that you're building to do this, it sort of makes me wonder the composition of those teams is to get chemistry and to get them working together and to make sure that they don't get going down a path that's not going to be collaborative with the rest of the group with a broader vision. To me, that seems like a very big thing. And then making sure that it's this group thing sometimes cannot be as effective. I mean, I like to insert entrepreneurial thinking and yeah. different points of view into big decisions like this.
Yeah, well, and I think that entrepreneurial thinking would be a really important component of this. But I think, to me, part of the work is, you know, what I would say, learning together to do things a little bit differently. So, you know, setting those expectations as we kick off on this, of like, how are we going to operate together? What are the clear kind of mm-hmm. rules engagement? How are we thinking about these different terms? You know, because this is even, you know, I feel like I'm always throwing around specialized language, which mm-hmm. you don't want to do, but you get in the space and there you are talking about inclusive economic development. And most people are like, what?
Yeah. you know, that happens in venture capital too. We start yeah. throwing around all the acronyms and stuff. And it's like, okay, break it down for me, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So coming together around like common, you know, a common language, a common understanding of what it is we're trying to do. And we're really pointed towards creating jobs. Like that's what this okay. program is all about. Like creating the jobs, reducing barriers to employment and making inclusive pathways into those jobs. And so we want to be really goal oriented. We want to be clear around the parameters and we want to kind of have a common way of learning and working together. And this isn't just a planning for planning and doing that forever. This is the part of the SURF program is implementation funds. And so we'll have the opportunity to submit high priority projects to the state to be funded. And then we'll also have this really comprehensive investment strategy for our region. So even if we have, you know, really great projects that don't get funded by the state, it'll give us a better platform to go to other funders to think about how to make those happen in different ways. So I think it'll bring about a lot of action as well.
Okay, so you're in the early innings of this. Is it really launched yet? It sounds like the plan is there. And when does it kick off?
We're just getting there. So really okay. just this month is when we're kicking off. And we actually have an event on Monday, on February 13th.
Okay.
And that's going to be kind of our official, here we go,
awesome.
kind of thing.
Are yeah. you what's the emotion about that? Are you excited or nervous or?
All of the above. yeah, no, it is an ambitious project. It's going to be a big challenge, but I'm really excited about it. I think the opportunity for impact and all the ways we'll be able to just really get our arms around what are the big exciting things that are going on and how do we kind of add fuel to those things, I think is really exciting.
That does sound cool. Okay, so that's SURF, which is only a fraction of what you do. Broaden it out and talk to us about some the other areas where you're having some impact.
Yeah. Well, broadband and digital equity, that's a major area that we work in.
Okay. Now that's getting internet to places that don't have internet now.
That's right. Yep. And that means it's infrastructure. So how are we building the conduit and the lines that we need? It is kind of access to technology and like computers mm-hmm. and things like that. And then it's the skills piece. And that comes into workforce too. But how are people digitally literate and have the skills that they need to actually apply that to jobs and other ways of engaging in the community? And so we do a lot around all three of those pillars. And we bring research, we have a coalition, we have community, we're kind of helping bring community partners and resources to help people get the digital training and learning that they need.
Yeah, so how do you think about this in terms of like creating a timeline? Because if you think about this infrastructure that needs to go in, that's not a right now thing, but the,
right.
but the training might be able to happen sooner than that there, or getting computers out there might happen sooner. How do you sort of project out a timeline for that, you know, that effort?
Yeah. I think of it kind of like a three-legged stool. So you really need to be working on all of them. And you're right, the infrastructure takes longer to get in. I will say, in terms of just the, we still have a lot of gaps in broadband access, but we have a lot of people who have access as well. So we, you know, so always keep pushing on, whether it is a rural area, kind of urban deserts. There's a lot of like food and ag or other rural businesses that really lack the internet that they need. So working with businesses on the infrastructure piece to make sure that they're able to optimize their operations. So, that's always a push. With the knowledge that it doesn't, that's not an overnight success, that really takes a lot of time.
So you've got to do a lot of, I'll call it band-aiding, if you will, or temporary fixes while that bigger plan is in motion.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And there's different, sometimes the issue is affordability. So, maybe the infrastructure is there, but it's not accessible. So you can kind of, there's different ways of installing the infrastructure that's needed that's all on different timelines. So it's a, it's a puzzle.
And in terms of that, so if you need to provide computers, it's like who pays for all that? I mean, I can imagine the people that are running the underground it's done by the service provider, right? It's like, hey, Wave, you need to get internet out to our, rural location here, or, AT&T. I don't know who these people are for sure that you're working with, but on getting computers into the hands of, let's call it lower income people, who pays for all that?
There's a lot of government programs, okay. I will say. So we do a lot of work with the California Public Utilities Commission. Then there's the federal agencies as well. So there's, for example, the Internet Affordability Program, where people can get low-cost internet, and it's really a matter of going through the motions and getting people signed up. So we've done a bunch of drives with community partners to bring people in and get them signed up for affordable internet to just use that resource that's already out there and make sure people are aware of it. There's also, philanthropy, there's corporate interest. Okay. We have some good anchors there across the region, but it's like many of these social issues. It's a kind of all hands on deck wherever you can, get the funding where you can and rely, some on government programs, but other sources as well.
You think about how much time is wasted because people don't have quick, easy access to this stuff. People are driving places to use the internet or maybe not using it at all. And it's like, how inefficient, and especially with people that are, we talked about jobs a second ago. There's a lot of people working remotely now. And so if you're in an area where I can't even work remote, well, that takes you out of a certain type of job.
Yeah. And I think, part of the shift is, the internet's not a nice to have anymore. Like it used to be just like an amenity or something that's just nice to have. But we've seen with the pandemic and with just where we are in the world, it's kind of like it should be like a utility.
You have to have it.
You have to have it. Yeah. And so, there's a lot of ways of looking at how do we make this a more public system that is really like a utility?
Okay. All right. Let's talk about other areas of impact. Let's keep marching down the path. Because I know it's not that only.
Yeah, no, we have other areas of impact. I'll talk a little bit maybe about the clean economy work that we do, because there's a lot of intersections there. So we do work, it's kind of in the climate space, but really around here, there's a lot of clean air work that we do. So we're doing clean air, or we're doing air monitoring in disadvantaged communities or in low income communities to help monitor and create action plans for air quality issues. Because as we all might know, air quality is a huge issue for our region.
It's a big issue, but I didn't. Is it a big problem?
It is a problem.
Isolated, or where is it? All of us are breathing in this bad air.
Well, to some extent, all of us are somewhat breathing in bad air some of the time. So we have, we are.
I don't really hear that many people. I mean, I hear about it in terms of globally and maybe China, but I never heard that Sacramento had worse air quality.
We do. Oh, and it's really just about where we sit geographically, because we're in kind of the bathtub of California. And so, air quality issues end up kind of coming right into the Central Valley that we're a part of and just kind of sticking in there. And so we are federally recognized as it's called a non-attainment area.
Wow. Yeah. No, we don't want to be breathing in bad air, but are there stats around how it affects life expectancy and, basically our health? Do we have more health issues here than other areas that have cleaner air?
Yes.
Oh, asthma. Because of the air?
Yeah, asthma and other kind of long-term chronic illness. So, and then, you know, it's really compounded close to our transportation corridors. And so for neighborhoods that are living like right next to highways and interstates, which is actually a lot because we have, you know, we have a lot of busy roads around here. It's a bigger issue. And then I will say, and this might be a bigger issue here in Placer County is the wildfire smoke seasons now that we can kind of think of as these like routine events that are going on that really affect our air quality.
And now you live out in Davis. When we have these wildfires up here in the sticks, how bad do you get? You guys get that. You get a taste of it. You have to go breathe it in.
Yeah, the ash raining down. And I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, I mean, we're in, I'm sure it's not as bad as in other places, but it's, I think we're all affected pretty equally across this region.
Are there simple solutions to solving this that we're avoiding or that we're going after and try to fix?
There's a spectrum of somewhat simple to much more complicated. So, you know, on the simple side, actually sources, there's a lot of indoor air pollution that can really compound people's air quality. So there's like small things you can do to help improve your indoor air quality. There are things like burning in your fireplace. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, I know there's a lot more limits on that, at least in some places around the region, usually more in urban areas.
Yeah, I know. I never really think of that as, you know, you got a fireplace. I'm just unaware. Yeah. People with a fireplace, you have less healthy air in your house because it feels so good to sit there next to the fire.
Yeah, well,
or a bonfire. Who doesn't love a bonfire?
I know. No, I love a fire in the fireplace, but it can be a major source of air pollution, not just in your house, but the smoke coming out of the chimney and then in kind of the localized area around your house. And then some of them are more complicated, like the transportation corridors piece. That's really about, you know, how as we like electrify cars, that helps as we think about like traffic mitigation. You know, there's all kinds of different solutions that take a lot longer to.
Well, it seems like the electric car issue, or not issue, the electric cars are really showing up big. How do we stack up? I don't know if you know how Sacramento stacks up in terms of percentage of people driving electric cars. Because I see them all the time.
Yeah, no. Increasingly, I see them.
I got Tesla down the street. The street that we're on right now has got so many electric cars.
Yeah,
I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, no, and I have one as well. And I see much more. I don't know actually where we are on numbers, but I will say we're a good environment for it. One of the things that can erode the battery for electric cars is cold weather. But we don't have that many freezes. We have, you know, just really good conditions for electric vehicles.
And the mobility center here in Sacramento, I know that's probably part of a main focus for them is solving some of the climate issues associated with transportation.
Yeah. And creating business startups and really like looking at the entrepreneurial aspects of kind of that particular sector. And I think this idea of like, hey, we want to be the clean transportation capital of the world. That is great for air quality and for climate. And it's also really great for our economy. I mean, that's really like that could possibly be a niche for us that the California Mobility Center is really helping to seed.
You bet. And any investors out there, I've invested into some of these companies and they've done well because it's a hot space to be in. So the valuations end up, improving rapidly because people want to buy that technology. And a lot of it's, you know, this is a good place to do it here in California.
Yeah.
Especially here at the Capitol.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we got air quality. What else? I looked at your website and I saw leadership and civic engagement. Is there a specific initiative around that or is that just sort of a broader thing that you work on?
Yeah, the idea behind that kind of portfolio of work is about, you know, areas where Valley Vision is really looking at some of the issues in the region and trying to push us and taking a leadership role. One of the ways that we do that that's in that kind of spectrum of projects is our public opinion poll. So this is a really unique asset that Valley Vision and we work with Sac State to manage this. We have a panel of 2,000 survey respondents and we send across our 6-county region, we send them surveys at least 2 or 3 times a year around kind of the big issues of the region. And then we release that data. What is so unique about it, first of all, is that you know, maybe you probably remember this, like newspapers used to be polling people all the time. And that's a big way that we get kind of our pulse on what's happening. And then it's newspapers as a business have been challenged. It's not happening as much anymore. So having a regional panel that you can go out to do polls is just a really unique thing. And it's the only one in our, it's the only one here in the region. So we work with Cat Public Radio, for example, and other news sources to provide that information. But the idea behind this is to be able to take the pulse of what's going on in our region, and also, you know, making sure that data and what we know about people's experiences is informing policies and programs and different actions that we're taking. So the most recent one that we did was the livability poll. So really looking at quality of life indicators and, you know, how are people feeling about their quality of life on a day-to-day basis here in this region? So we focused on, you know, lots of things that are very specific to this place. So we understand, do people still want to live here? Do they think we're going in the right direction? Do they like their neighborhoods? Can they afford their housing and other necessities? So really getting a pulse on those sorts of issues. And then in March, we're going to release another poll. It's called the Built Environment Poll, and it's about largely about housing and transportation. So really kind of diving into what types of housing do people want to see developed? What types of neighborhoods do people live in? What are people's biggest issues around transportation? Are people willing to do public transportation or other types of shared mobility? So I think it's a huge asset that Valley Vision brings, and it really does help. You know, we really provide that information to decision makers so they can be thinking about, you know, how are people feeling about these different issues.
On the poll you've already done with the 2,000 people across the entire region, were there any things that surprised you about that the results of that poll?
Yeah, well, there's always surprising results for sure. And on the livability poll, I think some of the standout results, we actually did quite a bit of questions around work and opportunity. One thing that we learned is that people really want remote work opportunities. They really want remote training opportunities. So I think the majority of our respondents said, yes, they would like to get additional training. They would like it to be remote and hybrid and short term. And then we do employer surveying as well. So we found that employers kind of want to give that too. So it's like, okay, we got to like figure out how do we do more of this? Because it's something that people are obviously really interested in.
What about in terms of geographic, Placer County, that's where we're at today. El Dorado County. I mean, the overall Sacramento area is actually one of the areas in the state that's growing. People are coming here.
Yeah.
U-Haul reports and Forbes reports are saying people are coming here. So I assume that we're, you know, that's a really good thing for us. And then my daughter's a realtor. And so I see the amount of people moving into Placer, the, you know, our region, our area. So I wonder though, are there pockets that are, not doing as well as say, and attitudes that are different than Placer County or El Dorado County, or maybe even Davis or Elk Grove, you know, some of these suburbs that seem to be attracting people, and maybe we're seeing a little bit less, you know, people trying to get downtown.
Yeah. I think Placer might be the fastest growing county in the region. So seeing so much going on around here, and there's always, you know, there's so many different kind of overlays into how people, like what's not what's driving people's perceptions, but like if you look at where people are feeling the same or differently or having different types of experiences. So the type, you know, those types of communities that people live in, like suburb, city, rural, that there's always a lens there that affects what people think about where they're living. And in, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to like pull like specific numbers about where there's differences there, but I will say that does drive people's thinking. But then we also have, you know, when you look at our region, like politics is a piece of that too. And we look at the data by that to see where, you know, those who lean Republican often have a slightly different view than those who lean Democrat, which is not a surprise at all. One thing that I do find is that there's usually, from a political lens, more commonality than there is difference. There's sometimes, you know, the typical ways that people are thinking about things differently. But when you're talking about your experience of day-to-day life and what it is that you value, I think there's a lot of commonality there.
I would think that everybody cares about public safety in a big way. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that's why people move to Placer County, is because maybe we're perceived, or maybe we are a little bit safer than maybe being in an inner city. But safety is like, sometimes we want the bare, like, give us the basics. Hey, keep me safe. I need to eat. I need to be safe. I need to, And then you're into like the size of my yard, how good's the school system, how good's the parks, and, you know, sort of the experience of, you know, day-to-day life. Are you diving into that stuff too? And maybe there's a longer term trend. I wonder if there's a longer term trend to, you know, the suburbs, and that's just not going to go away for a while.
Yeah. And one thing I've heard, I do have a thought about the poll, but I'll say one thing I've heard about suburban growth is that people basically like, it's not micro urban areas, but it's kind of like people will tolerate more dense suburban areas, like where there's kind of a town center. You know, and so like there's some mixed use, but there's also single family and apartments. And it's like the model is a lot of separate town centers that are have a suburban feel to them rather than what you think of as like the urban core and then just housing around the outer ring. So that's kind of shifting a little bit to say like, no, I want my own.
I like those areas too.
Yeah. I do too. And I forgot what I was going to say about the
politics. Okay, so on the politics side, what do you, I mean, we're a lot more alike than we're unalike, but where are we unalike? Where do you see the discrepancies there? Do some people view us as, because you hear, if you turn on the national news, you're going to hear, all you're going to hear about is how divided we are. So this is more like the truth, right? You're getting like a real, we're a diverse population and you're getting it straight versus I turn on CNN or Fox where it seems like we're super divided where maybe we're not.
Yeah, well, also, like one surprising result that that I've seen is on climate change, where you really think there was going to be this huge divergence around how people are buying into the fact that climate change is man-made and that it's happening. And we actually saw like it was like 95% agreement that climate change is real, it's man-made, and that didn't have a very strong political view to it, which I thought was interesting. And the other place where you can kind of try to break away from political differences is if you ask your what do you think about housing development? And, you know, if you ask a really general abstract question, that really pulls on people's politics. And Republicans might say one thing and Democrats will say another thing and there's not too much convergence. But when you ask about people's personal experience, you know, when it's, so if you ask, you know, what kind of housing development do you prefer? There might be a political difference to that, you know, about what people want to see in the community. But if you ask them what they personally like are looking for, they're actually usually looking for kind of the same things.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've noticed is everybody loves puppy dogs. everybody loves children. And everybody seems to love entrepreneurs and small business. I mean, we're sort of like this realm that I'm, the sandbox that I'm playing in. There, I don't get a lot of, you know, hatchets thrown at me for supporting small business. It seems that everybody believes that that we're the backbone of America.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's the way I take it, but obviously I've, you know, I'm one, it's one man's opinion, but I don't get a lot of pushback on that.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, there's a lot of issues that when you, depending on how you frame them and what angle you come at, you can get a lot more agreement. So, I mean, if we're talking like climate change, for example, can be really controversial, but you can, when you talk about the economic opportunity of new technologies that are coming in, that's a different type of conversation. Yeah. And so that can bring people together more.
I agree. Okay, so what have I not asked you? I want to make sure that I have one final question, but I want to make sure what did I not ask you that we probably need to make sure we cover?
One thing I'll just add, I guess, about the polling that we're doing is that we've been shaping a new annual event around this polling, this idea that we really are trying to bring data to people and bring people together around kind of the common issues that we all need to be talking about. So we did this for the first time last year. It was called the Livability Summit. And I want this to be the collaborative event of the year in the region so that we're really kind of creating this space where we can start with data and then have the conversations about the big things that are going on in the community and really shape some big picture goals. Because I think for me, the strength of an organization like Valley Vision and where I really want us to go is, what are our big ambitious goals as a region when it comes to economy, when it comes to environment, when it comes to our community, the health and well-being of our communities? Because I think when you can really articulate that and create a compelling story around some of the things that we all know are good and that we're all working on, but the more we can kind of bring a focus together, an ambitious agenda around some of these things, the more successful we'll be.
Well, one of the weird things about me, and this is my final question for you here. So one of the weird things about me is that I'm a daydreamer, right? I love to daydream. My wife says I'm the laziest man in America because I'm working, honey. But it's like my secret friend, right? My vision of what we can become as an entrepreneurial community. But I'm curious on the broader picture. The name of your organization is Valley Vision. Paint me a picture so that I can help manifest this for you, with you. Paint me a picture of the broader vision for Sacramento and the Sacramento region. How might I put that into a visual for myself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm a daydreamer too. I think that we're at a moment right now where we've just all been through a really hard thing together. There's a lot of change in the air, right? There's a lot of dissatisfaction, which is really uncomfortable. But that also brings about a lot of opportunity to do things differently. There's a lot of kind of momentum towards creating those changes from like a government investment and other types of, you know, resource base. So I think we're at a moment where we really can like daydream as a whole region and as a community about what we want the future to look like. I think we have a lot of opportunities to rethink some of our like roadway infrastructure. So really thinking about how we're supporting that clean mobility and the way that we're kind of sustainable in the region around transportation. And the more we can align our economic strategies to that too. I guess I think that we're in a moment where we can really take some big ideas and move them together,
Can we imagine a city where there's a lot less traffic?
I think less traffic. I think more more electric vehicles or more, you know, other technologies.
Quieter,
that we're
so it's
seeing.
A little quieter.
Yes, exactly.
Imagine
cleaner.
A city, it's a little quieter, a little cleaner. Uh-huh. You get from point A to point B a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah. So I think that's a piece of it. I also think when you're looking at our kind of workforce and education system, really looking at how do we create opportunities for people. And I think we're at a moment that we can do that. We're seeing so many different models of how people want to get trained and educated. And the more we can be responsive to that and connect that to the real needs of employers and growth, I think, you know, that's a way of ensuring a fantastic talent base for the future to come. So really thinking about access to opportunity, training people and educating people in different ways than what we've done in the past, and using that to increase access and interest in it.
So yeah, I'm imagining this city or this region that's sort of a beacon around the U.S. and maybe around the country, around the world, where people are saying, look what's going on in Sacramento. And then we have this female president who rolls into town. She's so proud of what we've accomplished. And, you know, that's the Sacramento future I want.
Yes, absolutely. I can get behind that.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. Evan Schmidt, the CEO of Valley Vision, sharing a lot about what Valley Vision is working on and really the work that she and her team are doing for Sacramento are extremely important. And you think about a town the size of Sacramento, what do we have? 2.5 million people, close to 3 million people. We're about 1% of the U.S., but we're in our own, in some ways, we're like a big town, and we have to work together like a small town. And I think that is beginning to happen. That's what the Backyard Advantage is all about, is people working together in support of a common goal. And in this particular case, let's help drive entrepreneurship, because we know entrepreneurship is so good for society. It's so good for Sacramento. And so we're doing that in a very collaborative way. There are silos that have been built all over the world, all over America, all over Sacramento, where people are working alone within their company. And I would have to say that I built my last group of security camera companies that way. Our companies collaborated, but really when you think about how we built it, it wasn't a group of partnerships that we built. We're doing it differently with some of the same attitudes here at the Growth Factory and rallying other people that believe in entrepreneurship, other venture capitalists, other people that are helping entrepreneurs, other people that are helping drive policy like Evan Schmidt is, but people working together with diverse thinking. different ways of going about the problem, but with a common goal and a philosophy of working together versus competitively. Collaboration over competition is our mantra, because really, if you think about it, we have so much more that we agree on than we disagree on. And despite the fact that the mainstream media and other people would probably want to characterize us as very divided, you know what? We all love puppy dogs. We all love children. And I think we all love small business. So if you want to be involved in this collaborative effort to help entrepreneurs, to help Sacramento small business, hit me up. You know where to find me, at the Mark Haney on Instagram. Subscribe. Come down to our offices in Rockland. Come to our events. Come be a part of it, even if it's just to kick the tires and see if it's the kind of place that you might want to collaborate. So to all you out there, fight the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. And to all you out there, fight the good fight for entrepreneurship. You know, here at the Growth Factory, here at the Mark Haney Show, here at Haney Biz, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement. Stop.